Welcome back, True Crime Army. I am your host, Margot, and this is Military Murder, a show where I focus on crimes committed by military members and veterans. But don't worry, you don't have to know anything about the military to listen. You just have to be a true crime enthusiast, and if that's you, welcome home. How's everyone doing this week? So listen, word on the street was that someone mentioned my podcast on the True Crime Society Facebook page, and this week we saw a significant increase in Facebook group members. If you're listening today for the very first time because you heard of the show on True Crime Society, or maybe you heard from me from Murder, She Told, welcome new friends and old friends alike. If you've caught last week's episode on Jack Wheeler, what did you think? Someone commented they thought Jack's case had been resolved, found to have been accidental. I tried doing more research to see if that was the case, but I didn't find anything. The person who reached out said that Jack had fallen asleep in the dumpster and that his body was crushed by the trash compactor in the garbage truck. Again, I know that this is a theory, but I haven't seen that confirmed anywhere. All right, let's get on to today's episode. Today's case involves the death of children and domestic issues, so please listen with care. Join me today as I tell you about the Fisher family massacre and fugitive Robert Fisher. Now, let's dig in.
Military Murder is an independent project and is not endorsed by the Department of Defense or any military component. The views expressed are those of the host. The content of this podcast is not meant to be legal or medical advice. Warning, this episode contains graphic details of murder and is not suitable for young listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Our story today begins in Scottsdale, Arizona in 2001. At 8:45 a.m. on Tuesday, April 10th, 2001, a loud explosion rocked a small residential community in Scottsdale. As neighbors ran to their windows to see where the sound came from, all they saw was billowing smoke and a neighborhood house with a giant hole in the roof with flames quite literally blasting towards the sky. As residents dialed 911 and asked for the fire department, sirens can be heard from afar. As the fire department came rolling in, the fire had virtually destroyed the entire home. Neighbors wondered if the Fisher family was inside, or they wondered if maybe everyone had made it out alive earlier that morning. As the fire was put out, firefighters checked inside the charred house and they were looking for humans. They found one adult and two small bodies. Everything was charred, so it was unclear if the adult in the home was the resident wife or husband. But from the small frames of the bodies and interview with neighbors, investigators believed the small bodies were the two young Fisher children, 10-year-old Bobby Jr. and 12-year-old Brittany. A closer look at the adult and its stature allowed initial reports to believe that the deceased adult was the homeowner's wife, 38-year-old Mary Fisher. Seeing as it was working hours, investigators assumed that they would need to reach out to the man of the house, 39-year-old Robert Fisher. They were going to have to break it to him that there was a terrible fire at his house that killed his entire family. Investigators went down to find Robert, who they assumed would be driving Mary's silver 2000 Toyota 4Runner, because her car was missing from the family home, but his car was still at the house. But when they arrived at Robert's job, they learned that he did not show up to work that morning. They also learned that in addition to Robert, the family dog, Blue, was also missing. Everyone wondered if Robert would show up to the house, but in the meantime, they started interviewing neighbors. Almost immediately, investigators learned that Robert and Mary had a tumultuous relationship, and screaming was the natural sound of the Fisher house. Mostly Mary did all the screaming at her husband, but to the neighbors, the couple didn't seem very happy, although the Fishers did demonstrate the persona of a happy family at church and other social gatherings. The bodies of the three victims were taken for autopsy, and immediately it raised concerns. For starters, all three victims were found dead in bed. It didn't appear that they even tried to escape the flames. And second, none of the victims had fire soot in their windpipes. Also, all three victims had their throats slashed from ear to ear. And Mary, the mom, she had been shot in the back of the head. The order of Mary's injuries are unknown, but it was evident all three victims were dead when the fire began. Additionally, a fire investigation revealed that the fire was not accidental. The house had been rigged to blow up. They found that a natural gas line had been disconnected from the back of the furnace. The interior of the home had been doused with highly flammable liquid, and an out-of-place candle holder was found in a random location. Investigators learned that Robert was an avid gun collector, and some of his guns were missing, including a .38 caliber revolver. By the end of the day, it was clear that they suspected that Robert Fisher killed his family, set the house on fire, and took off with the dog in his wife's car. But where was he? Robert William Fisher was born on April 13, 1961, in Brooklyn, New York, to parents William and Janet. He was the middle child with an older and younger sister. While Robert was born in New York, he was raised and spent most of his life in Tucson, Arizona. When Robert was 15 years old, his parents were divorced and the kids stayed with their father, who was working as a banker. The divorce hit Robert like a brick, and he swore to himself that if he ever got married, it would be forever. Robert graduated from high school in 79 and then enlisted in the Navy, spending his time in San Diego. While in the Navy, Robert worked in fuels. He would later tell his friends that he tried becoming a Navy SEAL, but when that didn't work out, he moved on from the military in 82 to try his hand at something else. After leaving the Navy, Robert became a firefighter, working in rural San Diego County with the Borrego Springs Fire Protection District. In 84, Robert met his future bride, Mary Cooper. They met at a Baptist social church event, and for the following year, they dated, they courted, and eventually got married. It was during the newlywed years that Robert hurt his back during a fire call, and that led to lower back surgery and ultimately led to an early release from the fire department due to the pain. Because of the surgery and post-surgical recovery, 6-foot Robert walked in a distinct manner. As I was writing this episode, I was going to say that he had a distinct gait, but as it was described in the research, basically most people have a little bit of a slouch to them, but not Robert. He walked with his back in an exaggerated erect posture, which forced his chest to puff out. In 1986, the Fishers packed up their things from California and moved to Arizona, where they purchased a 3-bedroom ranch-style house on a cul-de-sac near Mary's parents. Once they settled down, they went on to have 2 kids. First, a little girl named Brittany, then a little boy, Robert Bobby Jr. It seemed like now that the family had settled into their forever home, it was time for Robert to start thinking about his career. So he got an associate's degree in the medical field and began working as a respiratory therapist and a cardiovascular tech. Mary Fisher, formerly Mary Cooper, was born on October 3, 1962 in Chicago, but she was raised in Scottsdale, Arizona. Her dad was a school principal and she had 1 sister. From what I gathered, Mary was a homemaker, but she did have a part-time job at a medical supply store, and she spent most of the time doing activities with the kids and with the Scottsdale Baptist Church. Little Brittany was born in 88. She made good grades, was inducted into the National Junior Honor Society the night before she died, and she enjoyed baseball, basketball, and softball. Bobby was born in 1990. He played the trumpet, and following in his father's footsteps, he took a hunting safety course. In investigating the Fisher family death and the disappearance of Robert Fisher, detectives tried to interview everyone who came in contact with the family. While they believed Robert to be the perpetrator, they wanted to know, 1, where he was, and 2, why would he commit such a heinous crime? Were there any red flags leading up to the murders? Well, they heard this one story that caused them pause. You see, Robert loved to fish and hunt. And one time while on a hunting trip with some buddies, Robert killed an elk. Yay, great for hunters. But something that Robert did rubbed his friends the wrong way. They thought it was odd, maybe a little weird. I don't know much about hunting, but his friends described that on that occasion where Robert killed the elk, when they got up to it, Robert decided to rub the elk's blood all over his own body. That kind of grossed everyone out. It wasn't like he got blood on himself from moving the elk or cleaning it. He just did it for fun. As for his marriage, everyone knew that Robert was, I'm air quoting here, traditional. He wanted his wife to be a housemaid, expecting even the junk drawer to be tidy. Which honestly, listen, if any of my listeners have advice on keeping a junk drawer tidy, DM me. Because I have like 3 junk drawers in my kitchen from all the time I'm just trying to hide items from my kids. Anyway, Robert was known for criticizing his wife often. He had his role and he made sure Mary knew her place in the marriage. For example, On one occasion, when they went on a family camping trip with another family, they recalled that Robert looked up at his wife and said, "Mary, I want these kids in bed." And he didn't say it in a joking manner, just straightforward, like, "Woman, do your job." Again, this was probably very in tune with the times, but Robert took it to such extreme that even his friends were like, "Dude, that's weird." On top of this, Robert worked to pay the bills, and he didn't allow his wife to spend not even a dollar. In fact, if she wanted to spend any money at all, she would have to get a part-time job. And that's exactly what Mary did. She wanted a computer and a sewing machine, so she saved up her pennies, purchased the items, and she used anything extra to treat the kids to food outside of the house. Mary, while she was very non-confrontational for the most part, her friends described that she was a tough cookie. Well, in 1998, our homeboy Robert made a crushing confession. He told Mary that he had, quote, "an illicit encounter during a massage," end quote. Boy, please, you crazy. He felt bad about this illicit encounter, so he confessed to his wife. Mary was furious, rightfully so, and she told Robert that she needed space, so Robert left on a solo trip. It's unclear if Robert was going to keep working but take some time alone, but Robert liked to go camping, so his initial plan was to go camping for a month by himself. He left, but a few days later, he returned to Mary. He gave her a note and told her that he couldn't live without her. He told her that he understood if she left him, but as we discussed before, Robert used manipulation. He was like, "Listen, you can leave me, I get it, but if you do, I'm going to kill myself." In the same breath, he begged her to give him another chance and promised to be a godly father and husband. Mary was not mean-spirited, so she took Robert back and they agreed to see a counselor at church. With regards to Robert's suicide manipulation, he not only told this to Mary, but he shared that with a friend. You see, Robert suffered a lot after the divorce of his own parents. I mean, it affected the man so much that 25 years after the divorce, now he's a grown man, almost 40 years old, and Robert still brought up his parents' divorce to his coworkers. Now listen up, Robert's situation was a little bit different in that when his parents divorced, his mom appeared to have abandoned the family. So growing up without a mother, Robert often shared that he thought his life would be way different if his mother was a part of his life. So Robert constantly lived in this state of fear of becoming a divorcee. He went to the extreme. He didn't get very close to Mary's family for fear that they would reject him, and he would tell them often that he would never get divorced. After the affair confession, the Fishers appear to get back on track. And with family counseling, Robert got connected to the men's group at church, even going as far as carrying Bible verses on his person to guide his actions. But Robert would secretly spiral, something he hid well with a smile. And when he couldn't keep it a secret any longer, he quite literally blew the entire thing wide open. On Monday, April 9th, 2001, Robert, in an obviously good mood, different than his usual self, got to work and asked a coworker if they could fill in for him that evening because his daughter was being inducted into the National Junior Honor Society. Later that week, Robert would be celebrating his 40th birthday, so he was scheduled for a vacation day on Friday because, according to him, he was taking the family on a camping trip. That evening, Brittany was inducted into the Honor Society, and afterwards, the entire family headed home. One nearby Fisher neighbor told police investigators that at around 10 p.m., they heard an explosive argument coming from the Fisher home. The voice heard screaming was Mary, but this wasn't out of the norm, as she would often be heard screaming, calling Robert worthless and yelling that they should get divorced. The argument eventually quieted down, and then in the morning, everyone was dead and Robert was missing. Detective John Kirkham of the Scottsdale PD was on the case, and he revealed that during their investigation, the superficial side of the Fisher family life was good. Robert was perceived as a good father, a good husband, and a church-going man. But it was revealed that Robert wore many masks to disguise who he really was. A large-scale manhunt for Robert began. They were looking for Robert, the dog Blue, and Mary's car. And the first clue that led to the belief that Robert was a perpetrator was that they got a hit from an ATM. Robert appeared on video surveillance at the bank withdrawing $280 in cash at 10:43 p.m. on April 9th, a good 10 hours before the house exploded. $280, which with inflation is equivalent to withdrawing $500 today. That amount isn't a lot of money, but why was he withdrawing all that money within the hour that his neighbor heard him and Mary in a screaming shout? Authorities wondered if Mary and the kids were dead by that point. In the ATM footage, you see Robert wearing an Oakland Raiders baseball cap, and in the background, you can see Mary's forerunner. When Mary's family heard about the murders, they couldn't fathom that Robert committed such a heinous crime, but they weren't sure. Mary's dad, Bill, pled with Robert over the news, saying, quote, "Wherever you are, Robert, we love you. Just come home. I don't know what's going on. We don't know anything for sure, but we'd like to hear from you. Please, Robert," end quote. On day 10 of the investigation, an even bigger lead came in the form of Mary's car. Yep, a camper called in Mary's 4Runner abandoned near Robert's favorite hunting spot, near Tonto National Forest. The SUV was tucked real deep in the woods, and the most shocking discovery was Blue, just chilling by the car, alive. Investigators searched the car inside, which had been wiped clean of all fingerprints. And sitting inside the car was the same baseball cap that Robert was seen wearing at the ATM. But Robert, poof, gone. Robert's disappearance and the Fisher family murder would make its way to the old unsolved mysteries. And Detective Kirkham said that they believe the car had been abandoned there only within 24 hours of its discovery. And they thought that due to the fact that it was under a pine tree, but the car had little dust or pine needles on it. They also felt that Blue had been well taken care of up until that point, because while he was hungry, he looked healthy and wasn't famished. A cute side story about Blue is that the veterinarian who checked him after the ordeal ended up adopting him. Blue lived for another 12 years with his new family. Okay, Blue and the car were found on day 10 of the search for Robert. The area where the car was abandoned was really the only clue police had. The SWAT team intensely searched that area looking for footprints, a recent campfire, or even abandoned clothes. They searched the area on foot, they searched the area with dogs, and they even searched the area with helicopters in the sky. Authorities followed footprints into a cave known as Club 41, but they didn't find anything. They searched other nearby caves, even using sewer cameras and gas grenades to try to elicit a response from someone who might be hiding. But nothing. There was another set of footprints that led detectives to the Fort Apache Indian Reservation, but once they got there, they would have had to ask for permission to search further. For unknown reasons, they never asked and they never searched. After a few days with no signs of Robert, the search was called off. Police came up with possible theories. One, Robert walked off and completed suicide, but his body was never found because of how vast the area was. Two, Robert hid in one of the caves and died from lack of oxygen. Or three, he was on the run. The cops weren't too enthused about the first two theories because they felt that if Robert just walked further into the forest, the dog Blue would have followed him. A source close to the case mentioned that Robert could literally be anywhere. He killed his family, allegedly, before the 9/11 terrorist attacks, and security was lax back then. All the leads dried up. They tried looking into Robert's cell phone records and found that Robert turned his cell phone off the night before his family was found. He never used any of the credit cards nor touched any of the bank accounts. On July 19, 2001, months after the triple murder, a state arrest warrant was issued charging Robert with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of arson of an occupied structure. He was also charged with unlawful flight to avoid prosecution in a federal arrest warrant. In June 2002, Robert was added to the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list. They listed a $50,000 reward for information leading to an arrest. During the announcement, the FBI stated, quote, "Robert William Fisher is the 475th person to be placed on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list, which was established in 1950. Since then, 445 fugitives have been apprehended or located. 145 of these 445 were due to citizen cooperation." Two factors that cause a fugitive to be placed on the list is one, the person is dangerous or has a record of serious crimes, and two, the FBI believes nationwide publicity will lead to capture. That same month, an episode on Robert Fisher and the murder of his family was aired on Unsolved Mysteries. I must be on an Unsolved Mysteries kick because last week I covered the case of Jack Wheeler, which was also on the recent Unsolved Mysteries. During that episode on Robert back in the day, Robert's sister shared her disbelief that her brother could commit such a heinous crime. She had so many questions. Where did he go? How did he get there? $280 can't get you very far. She said he suffered from severe back pain, so what happened to that issue if he was actually still on the run? Detective Kirkham opined his belief that Robert was still alive. He believed Robert started a new life and assumed a new identity. Mary's sister Myrna agreed with the detective. She figured if Robert was actually going to kill himself, he would have done it right there after killing everyone else. Throughout the years, there have been many possible sightings of Robert, including his doppelganger up in Canada, who, according to reports, was a spitting image of Robert. But it turned out it wasn't Robert. In April of 2016, 15 years after the murders, the FBI released age-enhanced images of Robert as a 55-year-old. Because remember, when he vanished, he was almost 40. They also announced a $100,000 reward. Robert is described as 6 foot tall, brown hair, blue eyes, with a gold crown on his upper left tooth. He chewed tobacco on the regular and had an exaggerated posture that I talked about earlier. He vanished in Arizona, previously lived in California, and has ties to Florida and New Mexico. In April of 2021, the Arizona Republic released a multi-part series on the Fisher family murders. This would have been 20 years after the triple murder. Robert's sister still hopes the cops are wrong about her brother. She said she didn't believe her brother did it, or at a minimum, didn't believe her brother planned the murders. The week before the tragedy, Robert was still working on the house, fixing the AC unit, and the house was almost paid off. She just can't fathom he had planned all along to kill his family. On November 3rd, 2021, Robert was removed from the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list because, according to the FBI, he no longer fit the criteria. Specifically, his case had been publicized for over 20 years, and they were no closer to finding Robert. Robert Fisher remains a fugitive until today, and the FBI is still searching. An FBI agent told the Arizona Republic, quote, "We don't know exactly what happened, and I think their families, both Robert and Mary's, deserve that information at this time," end quote. The police theory about what happened leading up to the murders is this. They believe that between 9:30 and 10:15 p.m. on April 9th, Robert killed his family. Then he rigged the house to explode by disconnecting the gas line, pouring flammable liquid throughout the house. He lit a candle and then left. Then he went to the ATM to retrieve some money and went on the run. They opine that Robert might have thought the charred remains would hide the gruesome crime. But I'm not so sure I believe that theory because Robert was a former firefighter, so I am sure he knew that a fire really could not conceal a triple murder. But I guess we might never know what happened, or why Robert, who is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, did what he is alleged to have done. If you have any information about Robert's whereabouts, please reach out to the FBI by visiting tips.fbi.gov. Thank you so much for checking out this week's episode. And for those of you who have shared this show with friends, family, or Facebook pages, thank you a million. I love you. Word of mouth is really the only way to get others to listen. And it's kind of fun to talk about episodes with others who have listened before. If you have binged the entire episode catalog by this point, make sure you check out my bonus episodes on Patreon and Apple Premium. We are up to 42 full-length bonus episodes at the moment. By the end of this year, there will be close to 50 bonus episodes altogether. If you're interested in that, visit patreon.com/militarymurder. Military Murder is a Mama Margot production. This episode was researched by Haley Gray. This episode's executive producers are Myrtle, Falcon 13, and Jess. The theme music was created by Tyops. Until next time, remember, you never really know what someone is capable of, so remain vigilant always. You have a fabulous week, and I'll keep digging to bring you another military murder story next week.
Mama's working on her podcast.